Welcome to the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show. This is South Australia's summer cricket wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define cricket across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk cricket with Sophie Hilditch and Ben Hook.
Welcome back, everyone. We're in 2026 now, season 3 of Hooked on Sport. And guess what? The introduction is getting done by the only Sophie Hilditch. Ben Hook, welcome back. Happy New Year. How was your New Year's Eve?
My New Year's Eve was excellent, Sophie, but it's been pretty rough waters ever since. My goodness. Spent 3 days in hospital, mate. Tough. Feel like I've come out the other end of it and I'm all the better for it. But my goodness, yeah, as sick as I've felt in a long time on New Year's Day into the 2nd of January. And 2nd of the 4th wound up in a hospital ward. So cannot recommend. Not self-inflicted either. I know a lot of people are thinking, wow, Hookshot, that's a one almighty New Year's Eve you've had. But no, just unfortunate timing. And I was very, very ill for a while, but I'm back out the other side now and keen to chat cricket with you, mate.
Yeah, it's a tough start for the New Year's for you. But you know what? It can only get up from here, and it's good to see that you're back healthy. My New Year's was a little bit different. I actually headed to the SCG and I was sipping free French champagne, and I was particularly quite happy in a little Cricket Australia box. So I was a little bit sad when I heard you were in hospital and sent you a couple of photos of just me and a glass of champagne and said, hope you get better, mate.
Yeah, that really cheered me up, Soph. Amazing. I believe you were there as a tribute to Granddad, is that right?
Yeah, I was there for a tribute to my grandpa, which is Bob Simpson. Cricket Australia put on a lovely little ceremony for him. David Boone got out into the centre of the pitch during the tea break and had some beautiful and kind words to say about Pop and his contribution to Australian cricket. So, look, whilst I did have a couple of champagnes, I made sure I was sober enough to listen to that tribute, and it was beautiful. But, Ben, let's get kick-started. Our first podcast of the season is going to be all about cricket because, by God, was there a lot of cricket during the festive break. But let's hit us off, with Ben's best.
Good start, Soph. Bo Webster, Ben's best for this week. Dropped at the start of the Ashes series. You would probably make the argument unfairly. There was a whole host of things going on around him in that Australian team that saw him squeezed out in spite of the fact that he'd been performing superbly for Australia. Would have been easy for him to sook it. We kind of saw Nathan Lyon sook it a bit when he got left out of the pink ball test at the Gabba. No such thing from Bo Webster. Just enjoyed the fact that he was in and around the squad, did everything he could while he was waiting for his opportunity. It came somewhat surprisingly in the fifth test when Australia left out a spinner, and he's performed sensationally. Batting at number 9, would you believe, but 71 not out, now getting a bowl as England try and set Australia some sort of target in this second innings. But he might now head to Darwin when we take on Bangladesh in August as Australia's number 1 test all-rounder. And when you consider where he was at the start of this series, I think that's just a tribute to the way he handled the adversity of the entire situation, and he's come out the better for it. And yeah, he goes to Darwin as our number 1 all-rounder most likely, and could be heading to the Ashes in a year and a half time as our number 1 all-rounder. And that's saying something considering where they had him and Cameron Green pegged in, you know, even 6 weeks ago. So yeah, very, very impressed with the way Bo Webster handled it, and he deserves nothing less than Ben's best this week. Soph, what about Soph Star?
Well, I got to say, excellent choice for Ben's best. I completely agree. And well, my father actually kind of touched on it a little bit, what people can do in the face of what people can perceive as failures and then coming back all the better for it and all the better, stronger. And I think that's what Bo Webster has done. But look, I've gone down a similar vein. I'm actually going the Australian wicketkeeper, and that's South Australian Alex Carey as Sophie Star. To me, this felt like a no-brainer. I think player of the Ashes is going to be a battle between Mitchell Starc and Travis Head. But to me, Alex Carey was instrumental in Australia retaining the Ashes. He was brilliant with the bat, and that included his ton at the Adelaide Test. but he was impeccable with the gloves. He kept close to the stumps with fast bowlers Boland and Nessa, which I think was instrumental in combating the English baseball tactics, pressuring the batsmen and keeping extremely aggressive and returning their aggressive act with aggressive wicketkeeping. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was so impressive. It's a risky tactic, but I think it paid off. So therefore, Alex Carey is Sophie's star. What are your thoughts on that, Hooky?
Cannot disagree, Soph. He has been incredible this series. I think I would probably say that Alex Carey has surpassed what Brad Haddin did in the 2013-14 series back in Australia. That was all about Mitchell Johnson, but in the middle order and with the gloves, Brad Haddin did a sensational job, and I think Carey has been at least as good as what Brad Haddin did in that series. So, yeah, perfect choice, Soph. Well done. And a South Australian, which we always like to celebrate.
Always like a South Australian Sophie star. But let's head to the Ashes. Currently, this is a pre-record. We're actually recording this on Tuesday and it will be out on Wednesday. So the Ashes and the Sydney Test is yet to be finished. Currently, they're sitting, is it 5 for 237, England?
Spot on. Yes, exactly. Yep. Right. I just was watching the score tick over then. So we can't stamp it any more true to form than that. 5 for 237 with Jacob Bethel on 110 and Jamie Smith not out on 13.
So it's looking like probably favouring Australia for another win, maybe a 4-1 end to the series. Look, England, I think, are going to be returning home with their tail between their legs. I think, in my opinion, it was really their fielding that lost the Ashes. There were just so many dropped catches and it could have been a completely different story. But I'm keen to hear your thoughts. What do you think England have learned from these Ashes, or what they didn't learn, I should say?
They've just failed in the big moments, Soph. So when they had opportunities to really press home advantages against Australia, they didn't take it. And I think what we've seen with Australia in particular in the second test, the third test, and here in the fifth test, is when they've got an opportunity to control the game, they've controlled it and driven it to the point that they've taken England completely out of it. You make some really good points about the fielding. It has been very, very shoddy, and I think that stands to the way that their preparation or lack of it has really stood out in this series. But Australia are just a better cricket team in making sure that when they have an opportunity to press home an advantage, they do a far better job than their opponents of doing it. They're a flawed team, Australia, but the reason why they are so successful is because they are less flawed than pretty much every opponent they come across. And the flaws in and amongst the English game, from the way they've selected, from the way that they thought that guys who really came in underdone were going to find a way just to stand up, just to rise to the moment rather than fall to the level of their preparation. I think they have got so many things wrong, England. And to be fair, it's been a very, very disappointing series. And look, you know, there's still a sniff of a hope for England here with a lead of 55 and still 5 wickets in hand. Who knows what can happen on day 5. But all in all, it's been a very disappointing England, which has made for a very underwhelming Ashes. When you measure that against what we were really hoping to see in this series, which was going to be a fantastic battle over 7 weeks.
Well, I was so excited for this Ashes. I thought it was going to be an extreme battle. England came with quite a young side battling against Australia, who's quite an experienced side. I thought it was going to be a complete test. I was a little bit worried as well. Like, I thought England would outstand the test with fitness levels of a youngster coming in. But really, I think it was the lack of experience and the lack of preparation. It was just appalling. I know there was a lot of conversation about this Noosa holiday, and obviously Ben Duckett came out and there's pictures of him. Well, there's no other better way to explain it, but off his face. We've all been there. And I think it was an English fan who actually took the video, so I feel completely sorry for him because he was done by his own fans. But it wasn't actually that for me. I think, you know, that was personal time, whatever. It was the lack of preparation in terms of not playing enough practice matches, not getting used to our Australian wickets, which were playing completely different to what they're used to. That, for me, was really what happened. And then I take your point about Australia being able to make those big moments. But for me, the series was really won by the performances of Mitch Stark, Travis Head and Alex Carey. When England were looking like they were in it and they were about to win, those three players were really the ones that stepped up, took the runs and took the wickets as well.
Yeah, well, if you measure those three players compared to the opposite number, so the number one pace bowler for England, you would probably argue coming into this series, was Jofra Archer, who went average test, pretty good test, injured out of the series. You take Travis Head against Harry Brook, because they were probably both starting at number five. I know that Head went to opener, and then maybe you measure him against Ben Duckett, and that wasn't even a contest. But Harry Brook, you know, okay in this series, but hardly set the world on fire, probably did more damage to his reputation than enhancing it. And then Alex Carey versus Jamie Smith, well, that wasn't a fair fight either. That was throw the towel in halfway through round one. He was that far ahead, Alex Carey. So, you know, if you identify just on those three guys alone, Soph, and it's a reasonable measure, my goodness, Australia wins these Ashes by a mile. No wonder that it's 4-1. It probably would have been closer to 5-0. I mean, look, the only test that England have won, and, you know, I know that we're talking about this match already being over and there's still a fair bit of cricket to play. But, you know, England won on a bit of a lottery pitch, you know. You could have thrown a coin in the air and seen who won that match just as much as... I mean, there's just no... There was as much strategy to it as, you know, there was, like, you know, a game of... you know, memory cards that I play with Molly. She still beats me at that, by the way. So, yeah, look, that measure, those three guys have just completely dominated, in particular the three guys that you would expect them to be competitive against from the England side, has not been a battle at all.
Agreed. But talking about Australia, and obviously we've commented on a lot in this podcast about the experience of the Australian players, do you think this team is starting to show a couple of cracks, a couple of issues coming through?
Yeah, I mean, I've always felt like they are flawed, Soph. I've got to say one thing. I do love the fact that they have really gone in for the kill here in Sydney. I thought there was a bit of a query over their ruthlessness. They can win a series and then cruise a little bit. I think if you remember back to even the Melbourne test only 2 weeks ago, it felt like that they got there, and this is all a bit hard. We've already won the series, and it kind of looked like there was a bit of a collective shrug of the shoulders when things didn't go Australia's way. And that was very much incongruous with the message that we were getting from in and around the Australian team. Alyssa Healy, the wife of Mitchell Starc, was talking about receipts, that these guys had taken receipts from the English in the way they'd carried on in the lead up to this series and were absolutely determined to destroy them 5-0. And I was really unsure about with that Boxing Day Christmas hangover. But they've been really mean-spirited, Australia. They just kept them out there for the sake of inflicting physical and emotional pain on the opposition, and that's what Test cricket's about, Soph. So they are going to be sending them home embarrassed rather than with something to be salvaged. But, yes, the Australian team is flawed. And its most obvious flaw is when you look at the dates of birth. You look at those that column, Soph, and it's pretty scary. You have a think about where this existing team is going to be when they turn up to play the away Ashes in the middle of 2027. So add, you know, 20 months of age onto all of those guys that started in the first test. So what, Travis Head, obviously no problem, is going to be around 33. Jake Weatherall probably not going to be there. Manus Labuschagne's going to be 33, 34. Steve Smith's going to be 37, 38. Cameron Green is the only one who shows some youth. He's still going to be 27, 28. Everyone else is going to be mid-30s or late-30s, and the bowlers are even worse. Boland, Hazelwood, Starc, Lyon will be almost 40. All of those guys just look like that. I mean, that's a very, very aging team to take away, and that'd be the one criticism I have of Australia is how have they future-proofed this team? And it's something that we talked about with your dad, and that was one issue that he really had to challenge and to deal with around the end of the McGrath, Warn, Gillespie, Hayden, all of those guys, the end of that era, Langer as well. Australia's done a poor job of that. I think we have to accept that even though they're winning tests and they're winning series, they have done a poor job of future-proofing what goes on in the next 3 years, and that's going to be a big watch for the Australian team.
Well, Hooky, I'm super worried. We're going to have to call up the RCC and ask if we can get Nathan Lyon in a wheelchair and get him to start coming down and do some spin for us. Because, I mean, SCG, absolutely no spinner. Was this not a prime time to test someone out and give them Ashes experience? Nathan Lyon was out. Why didn't we do it? I'm just baffled by it. Like, I know what you said, we wanted to be ruthless and we want to win it 5-0 if we possibly can, but at the same time, isn't this a prime opportunity? We've got the series under our belt. Why don't we give some other people some experience and some mentorship from these older experienced players who are, let's be real, probably all going to retire within a certain period of time, basically all at the same time. But leading us into that, I've got to get your comments on this. There's been a bit of a spat between the ABC and Australia. Stuart Clark, former Test fast bowler, had some, I want to say, peppery comments regarding the head of cricket, James Allsop, and chairman of selectors, George Bailey. Look, he made some, I want to say, they were pretty personal comments about James's experience or lack thereof. He said something along the lines of him being just a grade cricket coach who throws, I think, underarms to kids is what he said.
Yep.
And look, I agree with his sentiment in terms of, like, I know there's been a bit of anger about where is the future of Australian cricket heading, and we don't know what that looks like at the moment. But I do think his comments could have been said more diplomatically, and we didn't really need to go to a personal point. But I'm curious for your thoughts.
I'll give you two answers to one question. Firstly, I'll just wheel back to the point that you made about Australia had an opportunity to give someone a test match and allow them to develop, and they refused to do it. And I think what we're seeing right now with England and Jacob Bethel getting an opportunity despite never having made a first-class 100, now on 116 not out, batting at number 3 for England, is a prime example. And you measure that against what Australia did in the third test this year when they decided they were doing away with Josh Inglis. They had a guy playing Australia A, which supposedly they measure Cricket Australia as invaluable as a guide for who they want to pick for Australia. Nathan McSweeney made a double century against the England Lions. Instead, they picked Usman Khawaja once again. Now, I love the fact in isolation that Usman Khawaja got one more opportunity and the opportunity to say farewell. But compare that to Jacob Bethel, who at 22 is now the next anchor of the England team, while Harry Brook and Joe Root are still there. He becomes a real threat in a year and a half's time for the Ashes. And Australia has missed that opportunity, and that's a shame for Australia, and it's a big win for England in what's been a pretty shambolic loss. Very quickly about the whole ABC business, Stuart Clark was completely petty. Yes, I understand that when you're on radio, you need to have some strong opinions, but the language around James Allsop was completely unreasonable, and I wholeheartedly agree with Todd Greenberg finding that offensive. And Stuart Clark, who was on the board of New South Wales, should actually start to worry about New South Wales cricket that is completely underperformed in the last 3 or 4 years, in spite of the fact that they get every opportunity and every advantage. They're routinely hosting the start of the One Day Cup. They're an enormous state. They've had incredible amounts of money spent on Cricket Central and the facility they've got out there in Western Sydney. Stuart Clark should start worrying about New South Wales cricket, that I would argue is a bit of a basket case of Australia at the moment, rather than concern himself with what Cricket Australia is doing. Todd Greenberg, very thin-skinned, to react by tipping out all interviews for the ABC or player interviews in the aftermath of that was a bit pathetic. And it actually only amplified the message that Stuart Clark had made about James Allsop and George Bailey. George Bailey's done a pretty good job. I mean, from the perspective of, if your job is just to pick each test 11 to win a test match, very, very difficult to argue with what George Bailey's done. Yes, I think the points that you and I have both made about the long-term future and the vision of the Australian cricket team has been flagging a little bit. But yeah, Todd Greenberg did not need to amplify that message and be so personally stung by it. You're going to get criticised in the big jobs in town, and you need to just deal with it and let it wash over you and move on to the next issue. So yeah, Stuart Clark's got bigger, he should be worrying about other things in his own backyard rather than someone else's, because his own backyard's pretty untidy. Todd Greenberg, don't worry about that stuff, mate. You can't afford to sweat it and make it bigger than it actually was.
100%, time to move on. And, well, it's time to move on to us as well. Let's go to the BBL, because there was so much BBL getting played. But importantly, the Strikers played last night, which was Tuesday night, and they had a win over Thunder. They've played so far 6 games. They've had 3 wins, 3 losses. Tuesday night was a fun one. Strikers set the target of 165 and the Thunder fell short by 6 runs, needing only 13 runs off the final over. With David Warner still at the crease, I was completely shocked. You were actually there. Let me have your thoughts. I can't believe you were there, by the way. I'm impressed. Rolls out of hospital in a hospital bed and just goes straight back to work. That's like what we like to see.
I still had the gown on and the dripping, Soph.
Okay, maybe we don't want to see that then.
No, you don't want to see the gown from behind anyway. Yeah. Yeah, look, when Adelaide Strikers set 166 for victory, if you'd have told me at the start of this Thunder innings that David Warner would still be not out at the end of it, I would have said, well, the Strikers have lost this pretty comfortably. So, yeah, from that performance, from that perspective, the performance was excellent. And I think what really pleased me, Soph, was that they got themselves out of two holes in each innings. They lost their big two for not much. So Matt Short and Chris Lynn were both dismissed, I think, before the end of the second over. They got a solid partnership out of Jason Sanger and Mackenzie Harvey. They then got bogged down again in the second half of the innings. But Liam Scott finished the innings really well to get them up to 165, which was competitive. I probably thought maybe a little bit shy. Then in the Thunder innings, Matt Jilks and David Warner put on a really solid opening partnership. Adelaide fought back beautifully in the end of the first half of the 20 overs. So, but they take a 10-over drinks break, and they'd taken 3 for 4. That was excellent to get themselves back into the game. Sydney Thunder handled the power surge really well and then got a big over off of Lloyd Pope. But they found a way to get home. And Warner, I think my cleverest thing about what Adelaide did and what Matt Short did, David Warner only faced 51 balls for the innings, 120 balls bowled, and David Warner only faced 51 of them. So it was genius the way they managed to keep him off strike and limit his damage. And then Luke Wood bowled a beautiful final over. So, yeah, the Sydney Thunder are a pretty poor side. So let's not get too carried away. And Adelaide Strikers, I think, have still got a bit to prove. But that's an important win, keeps them in shape. They've got some challenges ahead, of course. But, yeah, good win all around. And it just keeps them afloat heading into the second half of the season.
Well, do we have a couple of concerns about their team? You've mentioned their batting order. Is that a bit of a concern? Do we not have the depth for it?
It's curious, the batting order, Soph. So obviously you've got your big two, Short and Lynn at the top, no problem. And look, neither of those guys are going to come off every time. They're going to have failures. That's just the nature of batting at the top. I am a little bit surprised at the way they've structured up after that. Mackenzie Harvey is coming in at 3, who has been excellent for South Australia in one day white ball cricket. I don't think he's suited to the immediacy of T20 cricket and the expectation that you've got to get on with the game so quickly. I think he needs 4, 5, 6 overs, and I think he'd be better off coming in after the end of the fourth over. Jason Sanger I can deal with, but Liam Scott, I don't quite understand. He was a real find at the end of BBL 14, batting at number 3, and suddenly he's been shuffled down to number 5. And as evidenced by the way he played the power surge, I do think he's one guy that you can use up in the power play. I would like to see Mackenzie Harvey go down the order a little bit, and I'd play Liam Scott back at 3, where I think he shows a heck of a lot and can have a real effect when the field is up. I think that's a better structure for them. Then the other issue is their bowling. Their two best bowlers go home before the final start. Yeah. So that's Jamie Overton and Luke Wood, and that's a massive concern. And I don't know what they do about that, whether they rehash someone like Henry Thornton, who's had some success for the Strikers in the past, but it just looks like he's a little bit off the pace at the moment, Thornton. So yeah, I imagine that's probably their major option to try and cover a guy like that. And obviously, Tabrace Shamsi comes back into the side after having played that one game over there in Perth, and he'll be useful as a left-arm wrist spinner. But, a shuffle to the batting order, and they need some reinforcements with their bowling if they're going to really be a threat at the end of the year.
Well, before we move on to the women's cricket, I did want to have a small conversation with you. Look, I want to say South Australia are developing a reputation as one of the strongest cricket states at the moment. I think that's a bit undeniable. You actually on Facebook recently put up a stat, which I quite liked, for the Ashes. This Ashes just being, or still getting played, I should say, of hundreds made by SACA Premiership players was 6. Hundreds made by non-SACA Premier cricket players was 0. Now, that's at the time, obviously, before Steve Smith made his 100.
And completely, now Jacob Bethel.
Yep, and now Jacob Bethel. So completely ruined this stat for you.
Yeah. Looked good at the time, though, Soph, didn't it?
Yeah. I want to know, though, what was the public perception of this stat?
Yeah. Can I be honest with you, Soph? My phone has completely blown up in the last 24 hours, and it just goes to show that there are many, many conspiracy theories within South Australian cricket. So at least two people took the inference of that stat to suggest that I was endorsing and supporting and underlining, advocating even for the two-division premier cricket system, and nothing could be further from the truth. I just thought it was a fantastic stat that the three guys who had scored hundreds in the Ashes series so far had all come out of South Australian premier cricket. All three of them had barely played it in the last, what, 7 or 8 years, but it was just a nice stat. But yes, there was this conspiracy theory that now here I was advocating for two divisions. I just need to put this on the record, Soph. It was nothing of the sort. I make no contention whatsoever about the pros and cons of the two divisions in the Premier Cricket system anymore. I'm too far removed from it to have an opinion that's either authentic or valid. I am sceptical about it, quite frankly, because I grew up in a one-division system and I admire the authenticity of the way that competition was structured in and around that era. But it's not for me to judge, and I'm very comfortable. If the powers that be think this is the way to go, then that's the way they go. But it's not for me to endorse, nor is it for me to be critical of. And for anyone to suggest either was, yeah, really unfortunate. I do want to make the point, though, that yes, we've got this incredible scenario at the moment where we hold the One Day Cup, we hold the Sheffield Shield, and we've got these two guys in Alex Carey and Travis Head who are headlining for the Australian cricket team, along with Jake Weatherall that we have some claims to, Nathan McSweeney that we obviously have some more recent claims to, and Brendan Doggett as well, who played the Test for Australia. But I do feel like there is a little bit of a weak underbelly in South Australian cricket. I heard a stat that was really interesting this week. If you look at the BBL, there is only one current player who is getting a game who was born and bred South Australian. One out of 88 players. That's Lloyd Pope. And so, look, as much as I love where South Australian cricket is at the moment, I do not think it is as robust as what we would like to make it out to be. We do have some gaps still in the system, and there is still plenty of work to do. But you know what? When we've got two guys performing so well at the international level, like we do with Alex Carey and Travis Head, it does paper over a few of those cracks a little bit. And look, in our business, Soph, sometimes it's nice to just paper over the cracks, isn't it?
It definitely is. I was going to say, be careful throwing out another stat out there. I have to apologise to you, Hookie, though. I've got to admit, I was just scrolling down Facebook, saw your stat, thought, that's a cool stat. Keep scrolling. I didn't think you were capable of this, like, bigger, bolder, big statement about the two divisions. I didn't actually see that coming at all. So I deeply do apologise. I think it's nice that the public did think that you had the power to do something like that. So look, I apologise.
Historically, I think people would probably have, say 10 years ago, people would have looked at me for an opinion on those sorts of things, and I probably would have been prepared to offer it. But yeah, times have changed. I don't have any genuine comment to make about minutiae like the Premier Cricket competition, because I'm just too far removed from it to have an opinion that is warranted.
Let's head to the WNCL, where South Australian Scorpions are about to be playing WA. I think that will be tomorrow night, so the night of this podcast getting released. Can you just give us a quick debrief on where the comp is at and where does SA sit currently?
Sophie, it's a remarkable question, and my answer is probably even more remarkable. It's the most bizarre ladder that you have ever seen in an elite domestic sporting competition. There has been 6 rounds, of which South Australia has played 2 of them. So there are 2 teams, Queensland Fire in first place and Tasmanian Tigers in third place, who have played 6 games each. South Australia's in 5th place with 2 games, 1 win, 1 loss. And so it's the nature of a bye and seven teams in the competition. But it is bizarre that this is the way that it has all played out. So South Australia is going to play a lot of cricket in the second half of the year. Their games were against Tasmania. So that's one of the stronger teams of this competition that they're now through their two-match series with. So what have they got? They've got 10 games still to play. Victoria and Western Australia are pretty much out of the competition. Both of them are winless after four and five games respectively. So South Australia's got a pretty good draw coming home. They'll play Western Australia, they'll play Victoria, and they'll play ACT Meteors. Western Australia, of course, that starts tomorrow, as you pointed out. Then they've got Queensland and New South Wales. So if I'll wrap this up really quickly, but South Australia's in a pretty good position here because this part of the series coincides with the Indian Women's Premier League. Tali McGrath's volunteered to withdraw from that, and she's going to play cricket for the old Scorpions, if you like, the South Australia women. And there is no other women from South Australia who are playing in the WPL. So I think we're going to front up, and the team will be announced maybe late today. The team will look very, very strong. I expect Megan Shute will play. I expect Darcy Brown to play, and I expect Tali McGrath to play, all until such time as the Australia-India series begins, which is around about the, well, somewhere between the second and the third week of February, if you like. So they're going to get, I think, six games in each. South Australia will be very, very strong as a result and are going to rocket up the ladder, I suspect. So by the time they're all out potentially fronting for Australia, I reckon South Australia in that WNCL are going to be right in and amongst it. Queensland will be the team to beat. They're very strong, but they have been hampered by the fact that with the WPL, they lose Grace Harris and one or two others. And with that Australia-India series coming up, they will be a little bit depleted. So South Australia's a big chance to win that, and that's a fair way to come from the fact that you look at the ladder now, Queensland fire on 27 points, South Australia on four, but that gap will close quickly.
Bold statement, but I like it. Sounding a bit more like the South Australians might be the team to beat, not Queensland. All right, well, let's head straight to the local cricket. I want a quick wrap from you here as well. What surprised you to date in the Premier competition?
The Port Adelaide Cricket Club has very pleasantly surprised me in the Premier competition. It is a club, look, they won the A-grade Division 1 Premiership 2 years ago, so it's not like that they are absolute Johnny-come-latelys here, but the depth of that club has been astounding for all of the right reasons, Soph. They are actually in the top four at Christmas in every one of the four grades, first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, and there's been a run out in the test match as well. Manus Labuschagne was bowling and he's celebrating like the wickets to him. I'm not sure who's run out here. I suspect it might be Jacob Bethel. Yeah, he's walking off, so that's an unfortunate way. Or is it Jamie Smith? They're both walking off. We'll find out soon enough. But, yeah, big wicket for the Australians with the run out there. We'll find – anyway, let's get back to my point. Port Adelaide, a club that's notoriously struggled in particular down the grades, are currently sitting in the top four in all four grades at Christmas. It's a remarkable performance when you measure them against clubs like Sturt and Kensington that have got so many more resources at their disposal. Port Adelaide are doing a wonderful job in this competition.
And what's going on with the white ball competitions?
The T20 finals get underway on Sunday. East Torrens will take on Kensington. West Torrens will take on Tea Tree Gully. That is at Karen Rolton Oval on Sunday. And then the one-day competition isn't until February. Port Adelaide face Kensington. So that club again, Port Adelaide. Kensington, of course, atop of the Division 1 Premier League competition as well, first grade competition. West Torrens and Adelaide in the other semi-final. So that's not until February, so that's a little way away. So it's the T20s that'll be in focus on Sunday afternoon.
Absolutely incredible. And what about the Women's League?
There's four teams fighting it out for a top three. Only West Torrens are probably a bit far away at the moment. Kensington lead it from Glenelg. Sturt and Adelaide are essentially level in third and fourth. They're level on points, separated by a fair bit of net run rate. But, yeah, those four clubs are all going for it. And then on Sunday week is the T20 Grand Final. That'll be between Kensington and Adelaide as well. Kensington are gunning for five straight premierships in the women's premier competition. And so that'll be the first time since the mid-50s that anyone has achieved that in women's cricket. So that would be quite the historical benchmark if they could pull that off.
Kenzie, what an incredible record that would be. I do like Kensington. I love the colours. My brothers used to play for them, so I'll be gunning for the Kensington girls. Now, Ben, let's turn to the Women's Country Australian Championship, which is currently being played in the Barossa. How is SA going?
Yeah, they're third with two games still to play. It's a round-robin competition. They've got Papua New Guinea, who are part of this competition, and Queensland to come. They're fourth and sixth, respectively. Look, you probably think it's a bit far. In fact, it is. They are too far back now to chase New South Wales and Victoria, who are undefeated from their five games each so far. And so they're going to be fighting it out for the win. But, yeah, South Australia should finish third, could maybe even pinch second if New South Wales and Victoria do a job on one another and just allow a little opening for South Australia there. But, yeah, third out of six, not a bad effort for the South Australian girls.
When's the next game, Ben?
Yeah, they'll be playing tomorrow, and they play Papua New Guinea. This is all in the Barossa Valley, so finishes on Friday, and then they've got the big wind-up dinner on Friday night.
Oh, how incredible. Go up, have a bit of a wine, and watch a bit of cricket. Sounds absolutely brilliant.
And all on those amazing venues as well. There is one game, I think it was actually played today, Soph, that was on Adelaide Oval. I think it was on incredible. The same wicket that was used for the T20 match last night. So I'm pretty certain and amazing that Saka and Ayozma would have been able to coordinate this. So for the South Australian and Victorian country women's teams to go out and play a round robin game on Adelaide Oval, what a thrill that would have been for them.
Yeah, an absolute incredible achievement and just promoting the game of cricket even further and particularly women's cricket. Now, Ben, let's turn to the Hooked on Sport Player of the Year. Can you just give us a little bit of a recap just to get us back into the run of things and the goal of things, because look, it's 2026. People might have forgotten what happened in 2025.
The men are about to make a big, are about to come back to the field here. Nathan McSweeney leads on 9 votes from Mackenzie Harvey on 8. Jake Lehman is on 7. Nathan McAndrew, Liam Scott on 6. The leading woman is Ellie Johnson on 3. AJ Wellington, Maddie Penner on 2, Gemma Barsby, Courtney Neal on 1. But they've barely played. As I said, they've only played 2 games and they're going to play a lot of games in the next 3 weeks while the South Australian men aren't playing because of the BBL. So that competition is about to really narrow up and we're going to see, the women really start to push the top end of the leaderboard, because I reckon that's going to be a fun competition by the end of the year, Soph.
Yeah, I think this one's going to be incredibly entertaining. There are some names that are starting to become regulars as part of the Hooked on Sport weekly leaderboard. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that one ends up. Ben, as always, such fun talking to you about cricket. I'm so glad that we're into season 3 of Hooked on Sport and you've invited me to tag along in this awesome ride. I can't wait to see what this season does for us. I'm also really excited to talk about golf next week, because currently, as we're speaking, the Masters of the Amateur is getting played and friend of the pod, South Australian Reagan Denton, has just shot 7 under today. She's leading on 5 under. Also, Alice Cho, another friend of the pod and a good friend of mine, is currently sitting 4th at 2 under with 5 more holes to play. So I can't wait to talk about that. That's actually televised on Foxtel and KO on Friday. It's at Southern. I've played there. It's incredibly difficult, incredibly hard. This tournament's awesome. So I encourage our listeners to go and have a look before they start to listen to us talk about it and probably give a subpar recap, but you never know.
Hey, just while I've got you, Soph, and yes, it's a couple of things there. So thrilled to have you on for season 3. We had to up your contract. We multiplied it by 2. And added another 50% on top of that. So to be able to land you was superb. You are the foremost expert on South Australian golf, and you are going to be such a great asset for us going forward. I just want to share with you, as I was talking about, the South Australian women's team has only just been released in the last 10 minutes. Darcy Brown, Talia McGrath, Megan Shoot, all in that side. It looks an incredibly strong side to be captained by Gemma Barsby. So they will be red-hot favourites against Western Australia starting tomorrow night, Soph.
How incredible. Well, Hooky, let's wrap this one up and I will speak to you next week. As always, such a thrill.
Can't wait, mate.
That stumps on this episode of the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show. Thanks for listening. Help us reach more cricket-minded people just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company next time on the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show.